This is Steve Goodrich, known on the trail as Bird Shooter, and this is N2 Backpacking, a podcast for both hikers and backpackers.
Hey, backpackers, Bird Shooter here. And tonight on the show, we flash back to 1995 to speak with Matt, who I met while hiking the Appalachian Trail the previous year. Matt and thru-hiking partner Derek were known as Boys in the Wood in 94, and we had a chance to connect for this interview on May 13th at Trail Days. I stayed in contact with the Boys in the Wood after our thru-hike, and once I settled here in Atlanta, saw them from time to time, doing numerous multi-day winter hikes with the boys in the Smokies. But in this episode with Matt, it is one of 11 interviews that I did with the class of 94, less than a year after we finished our thru hikes, and I'm working to get these episodes sprinkled in with our regular podcasts as either bonus or regular shows. For a summary of these AT conversations, you can click back to episode 41, which consolidates clips of these 11 discussions into a single podcast, or stay tuned for episode 91. Where I speak in detail with Matt using a cassette tape recorder and small clip-on mic just 7 months after his 94 thru hike on the Appalachian Trail.
Big Daddy Boys in the Wood. It is
in the house.
10 o'clock and we've got interview number 7 of the night. Okay, first question. Boys in the Wood, Big Daddy Matt. Did you hike the approach trail? If so, what was it like?
Man, we knew that shit sucked. We're from Atlanta, and we got rides right to the base of Springer and just had to hike 0.9 up. We nixed that fucking Blue Blaze crap. Ain't part of the AT.
Okay, next question. Georgia. Now, you start in Georgia, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously.
Right.
Going Georgia to Maine. You're out of shape. You've got no skin color on your body.
Nope.
You know, it's the first day out there, man. You're full of life. What do you remember about Georgia when you started hiking?
All those good things about Georgia are good and true, but being a novice and starting out, but to be truly honest and answer this question, what I remember about Georgia, that would be our second day out when a tornado struck North Georgia and ripped the roof of a church off in Dahlonega, killed a bunch of people. We had no idea that there were tornadoes. All we knew was there was about golf-sized hail balls coming down on us. And it was pretty intense as far as just getting conditioned to the trail on our second day out. Everybody who was out on March 27th referred to it as Black Sunday.
Were you with Thunder Chicken by chance?
Yeah, he was the day behind us, and that's the night he got his name.
Yeah, I heard the story, man. I know that. That's cool. Okay, interesting experience in Georgia.
Yeah.
Okay, next question. This is going to be tough, dude. It's a thought provoker.
Okay.
Describe a typical thru-hiker.
Your typical thru-hiker is a person of much common sense, somebody who is an action person that can truly jump into any type of situation and make it through it and make it through it well. To hike the trail, there's a lot of preparation, but there's also a lot of run and gun type decisions that you make, like the run and gun type offense. And to describe a typical thru-hiker will be somebody who has that type of personality, somebody who is really in tune with reality and just life in general, that they can go ahead and decide to make a decision that's going to really, just truly, truly dissect their personality. For those 7 months you're alone, you might not spend much time alone, but you can guarantee yourself a few hours alone every day, and you truly think about things that happened to you in your past and just life in general, and if nothing else, it's a journey of discovery into the inner self.
Okay, Daddy. Next question. And that was deep, man. Yeah. You were reaching deep. That was huge. Okay. We get into Tennessee and North Carolina. You got the Smokies. You're constantly winding between Tennessee and North Carolina. You think back to Tennessee, North Carolina. What do you remember? What sticks out in your mind?
Yeah, that whole winding between Tennessee and North Carolina did get old. But I guess if there's one little part, and this would be not a happy memory, but probably something that just sticks out in my mind, would be that 20-mile stretch from Moreland Gap where some locals had laid out fish hooks years ago. And so there's just, and you can tell when you're walking through there that it's, you know, people's backyard and just some private property that's really run down and not well maintained. It's just not a pretty section of the trail. Then, in fact, the day we went through it was much like today, so it was really gray. And that certainly didn't add to it. But that's what, in my mind, just something that sticks out in that one section.
Matt, you're not the first person to say that, I must assure you. Probably the third or fourth that commented specifically about that area. Okay, Daddy-O, Virginia. You get to Virginia, man. You're there for 4 or 5 weeks, man.
Fucking it just, six.
It just keeps going and going. What are you thinking when you hit Virginia?
I'm thinking, is the whole trail going to wind down through these cow pastures? But,
so
what,
true.
Yeah, but what I truly do remember about Virginia is it was, you know, really right about the time that you're getting into a groove, about the first 6 weeks, you know, you're more or less, if no matter how slow you're going, you're approaching Virginia, most likely on your 6 week, you're in Virginia just through Damascus, and then you're in Virginia for the next 5 weeks. And if nothing else, you're really becoming in tune and familiar with the character that you are, and that's a thru-hiker.
Wow, man, that's big. Okay. Did you get the Virginia Blues, speaking of Virginia?
No, the Virginia Blues really struck us in Pennsylvania.
Everyone says the same thing, man.
I like to refer them as the Northern Pennsylvania Blues.
Everybody says that. Okay, Mid-Atlantic states. You're talking about Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Maryland.
Mm-hmm. Blow them off the map.
What do you have to say about those?
The Mid-Atlantic states, including Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, and Connecticut, for that matter, are finally when you're picking up, and that's when all like the jokes, you know, would come in. You've hiked 12 weeks, and you've only been through 3-4 states. More than that, I mean, excuse me, like probably 14-15 weeks. Basically, you're over a third of the way there. You've only gone through 4 states, and that's being Georgia, North Carolina, Tennessee, and Virginia, because Virginia is so long. But then you start knocking the states out left and right. West Virginia, 3 miles. Maryland, 40 miles. Pennsylvania was long, but then New York, New Jersey, bam, bam, Connecticut. And then you see little thought-provoking entries in the registers and at the road crossings, like 8 down, 6 to go. You know, those type of things where you truly realize that you're actually making progress. So that's something constructive about the Mid-Atlantic states. Also, you know, and in a truly, truly raw interview where you want me to be brutally honest, yeah, I mean, that was probably the mediocre portion of the trip because you're going through not such a remote and scenic area. And but to be honest, there are some places within that portion that are just truly remarkable. One being Sunfish Pond. You know, when you're standing on the edge of that pond, you could be in South Dakota, but no, you're in the suburbs of New York City in New Jersey. So, Mid-Atlantic states, you know, had their ups and downs.
Yeah, that's very true. I could see that. Here's a big one, Daddy-O. Think about it.
But to answer that one question, too, about the Virginia Blues and the putting it in the perspective of the Mid-Atlantic states,
right,
we dropped off the face of the earth in Slatington, Pennsylvania. We had been sweating in just incessantly. We were just covered in sweat every day. We were just walking over rocks, and it was the hottest portion of the trip. And we truly truly were down because we were supposed to go into this town, make a phone call, and have a friend come take us to the beach. Well, the trip fell through, and so we're just in this town, and we were so ready to take some time off that we're like, we're just staying in this town. And it was raining, and we this lady to Pennsylvania, it's no one else that we know hardly ever even made it to this town because it's not truly a trail town. But we end up there for 3.5 days, and all we did was buy a case of beer each day and lock ourselves in the room and watch TV. We watched 72 hours of TV.
Beavis and Butthead.
72 hours of TV, and 4 cases of beer later, we stumble out of there just to climb fucking Dante's Inferno at 11:30 a.m., just like Wingnut advises you not to.
And next question is, what was your best trail experience? What was your worst?
Is this referring to trail magic?
Anything. Like, what was really
Is there another question directed towards trail magic, though?
Yeah, kind of, sort of. I mean, but just overall.
You know, it's hard to put a finger on your best trail experience in that an experience you had either in the wilderness or in a town with your buddies that you were hiking with. There were so many that stick out in your mind, and each one was special in its own way that it's hard to put one above the other. But, you know, as far as trail experience, I think that goes into people that you've met in towns and that bestowed goodwill towards yourself. And that, that's trail magic in one respect, but also just human nature and relation in another, in that, you know, the person might not really have done something more magical than saying, you know, my house is right here, have a shower, do your laundry, and, you know, I'll cook you something to eat.
What was your worst trail experience?
Worst trail experience, you know, we were fortunate enough not to have any experiences that ever really threatened your person or just threatening type situations with local people or just some hostile weekenders. You know, to answer that, I think some of the worser experiences that I can remember are, you know, when you actually put the effort in and climb the mountain and you get to the top and there's just spectators that took a trolley up or a ski lift or that got a ride up to the top and really is just there saying, you know, nice view, glad I'm here. And they're just as happy to hop in their cars and go somewhere else.
Connecticut, Massachusetts. When you look back to those states, what do you think about
it? Wow. Connecticut and Massachusetts, Connecticut, I think about this one little package store in Cornwall, British Connecticut that'll give you a free oil can of Foster's Lager because you made it that far. The guy is incredibly nice towards thru-hikers and just people in general. He lives, you know, he's used to Michael J. Fox and Whoopi Goldberg cruising in and buying a six-pack on their way home. And, again, goes for New York. I think New York is the land of the delis. You can just go from deli to deli each day and really get some good food in.
But, sleeper said the same thing.
But yeah, oh great, puts me in the sleeper's class. And then Massachusetts. To be honest, it rained 6 out of the 7 or 8 days that we were in Massachusetts. The weather cleared up right when we climbed Graymore, right before we went into the Vermont, right before we crossed the Vermont border. So Massachusetts is, to me, I mean, one of my least favorite states. We had some horrible weather, and we didn't really get to appreciate the terrain and the scenery.
Okay. What was your favorite season on the trail, and why?
That question, you know, it's such a tough one to answer because that's one of the specialist memories I have of the trail, and that's truly watching Mother Nature turn her wheels. You know, you start out, especially when we started March 26th on our fourth day on top of Tray Mountain Shelter, we got snow. You know, we very much felt like we were a part of winter at that day and night. Then, you know, the weather does start to warm up and you truly watch spring. You truly watch spring develop. It's a great thing. You see a little more greenery each day. You see leaves slowly going on the trees. You see flowers begin to bloom. You walk through rhododendron tunnels that are just purple and pink and white and just so many colors that they just orchestrate your brain in just a plethora of color. It's truly amazing, that spring. And this is a long-winded question to a simple answer, but it's because then summer comes, and though you are sweating and uncomfortable, you know, you remember every summer you've ever had in your life, and it's just like this. And there you are, you know, just living a summer out in the woods. And then it becomes cooler. Slowly you notice the day's getting much shorter, and it's just that sniff in the air, the it's fall. It's that. It's you feel fall 2 weeks before it comes, because then it gets warmer again. But you sniffed her out like mid-August, and then fall falls upon you, and you're in the middle of autumn, and you're walking in a myriad of orange and yellow and brown, and you think of every calendar you've ever had that's had a picture of fall in it for September or October or November, and you epitomize that. You feel like you are one with every picture you've seen, and you're walking in fall. And to me, fall was the most intense and best season of the entire hike. In the Maine wilderness, on 60 degree days of the high, only because it was sunny, the air was cool, the wind was blowing, and you embodied fall.
All right. Speaking of fall, by the time you hit Vermont and New Hampshire, it's getting close.
Uh-huh.
What do you remember about those two states? You're back in the mountains, mm-hmm. The weather gets colder, you get into the whites.
Right.
What do you remember about Vermont and New Hampshire?
Okay. Well, Vermont was without a doubt our favorite state on the entire trail. Up until Vermont, you know, we had some good deeds done to our dust, but not many. And it was like, we kind of became a little cynical about trail magic, like, yeah, we never see it. I think it's all a bunch of crock, you know, this and that. And then we hit Vermont, and the owner of the t-shirt shop in Stratton puts us up for a week. Derek finally gets laid off the record, and it's just a fun time. I start knocking out that 27-year-old that I met from the wedding, and it was just the fucking things fell into place in Vermont, you know. So, you know, with all that in our mind, we're psyched, you know, that we're loving it, and we think we're king of the earth, and or princes of the earth. And we come to Rutland, and the day before Rutland, we meet this man named Dick Mossy, who's a retired veteran, who takes us into, he meets us, says, give us a call when we get to this to Killington, to Sherburne Pass, and he blows his mind that that's 18 miles away and that we're going to be there the next day. He thinks that is so far away, and we try to tell him that there's other people through hiking, and he's just a true person. He's, oh, nobody's doing what you're doing, you two, you know, he thought we were the only people doing it. We're like, you know, there's about 100 other people doing it, you know, and that do this each year, it's probably about 200 people. And he's like, oh, no one does what you two are doing, you know. Just truly blew his mind, so that he picked us up when we got to Sherburne Pass and took us into the city of Rutland, Vermont, and took us to the Vermont State Fair. It was Labor Day weekend, and there we are in a small town fair like I had always wanted to been to. It's like anything you've ever seen in a movie with you know, the country fair, and there we are just living it up at the Vermont Fair. And this guy cooked us steaks, he paid for every ride, made us go on every ride, and just hang out. And Dick Mossy had an imprint on us the rest of the way.
Did you ride him?
Oh, yeah.
Like, frequently?
No. Not as frequently as we should.
Okay. Well, you already said what your favorite state was. What was your least favorite state and why?
The very least favorite state. I've never really thought about this. This is a thought-provoking interview. Okay. No. We'll see. I want to say Pennsylvania, but there were some of the best bars in Pennsylvania. And, you know, 55-cent drafts were hard to come by in 1994. And to walk into a place where you can fill up your your jug with a 55 cent draft, you know, those are few and far between and need to have their respect in the scheme of things.
That's pretty good.
So Pennsylvania is ruled out there when I want to say I hated it because it was the most rocky and the hottest state. New Jersey, I'd like to tell you, was a nasty state also because I was sick and wasn't enjoying it. The one and only time I was sick on the entire hike, but you know, there were some spots to New Jersey that were gorgeous and that, having lived there for 13 years, never even knew existed. And so, with all those in mind, I'd have to say West Virginia because it was just too short.
Somebody else said the same thing. Somebody else said the same thing, man. Okay, Maine. You made it to Maine. What was going through your mind?
Oh, boy. I can remember that day. Because I remember it well. It was not a nice day out. It was the day we crossed the Maine border. And, you know, there we are, 13 states into the trip, knowing that good and well that we go through 14 states, and we're about to enter the last one, knowing that this is the beginning of the end. And I remember the day we cruised into Maine. We're coming down this ravine, and it's a gray and hazy day, and I'm not enjoying being out there at all. In fact, some of the boulders I'm going over is just truly hazardous, where you have to pay attention. You can't cruise. You have to actually think about every move you make, because as you're coming off of a boulder, you could fall and, you know, fall off into a ravine and really hurt yourself. And I'm just, when I'm about fed up of all this bouldering, I just stop for some reason and look right at this tree at this exact moment that I have no idea why I did it. And I'm staring at a plaque, and it was on a tree, and I probably would have noticed it, but the way that I just came off a rock, fell into a position, and was staring at this plaque was, you know, really weird. I'm like, this is meant to be. I'm supposed to really understand this plaque. And not that it was such a deep plaque that required some type of, you know, philosophizing thought, but it was a plaque saying that so-and-so was killed here on such and such a date, you know, and it got me thinking, you know, he probably was killed coming off of these rocks on a gray day like this with everything being slick. And, maybe I truly should not get down upon this and think of it in a bad way and pay more attention to what I'm doing, and be glad that I'm doing it, just so that next year there wouldn't be two plaques in that one spot saying this is the memory of Matt Brunn and Derek Porter, 1994 thru-hikers. And right when you get to the bottom of this one little section, you're still in New Hampshire, by the way, and you see a sign that says, "Welcome to Maine, the way life should be." And if you turn around, there's a sign right there saying, "Welcome to New Hampshire, live free or die." You know, that's the Southbounders welcoming to his second state, and which is a big deal, especially for going after 271 miles. That is close to the equivalent of Hot Springs, which I do remember, I think it's like 333. And but maybe it's only 267, and we're at 333. I believe it's to the equivalent of Hot Springs or Damascus. And there it is, "Welcome to New Hampshire," and you're leaving New Hampshire, and you're saying, "Yeah, New Hampshire, live free or die." That, to me, right now, was the best state I've been through so far. And then Maine welcomes you the way life should be. And to give you an answer, Maine has such an imprint on me that I want to own land and have a part of Maine that I can always go to and enjoy in the fall when the weather is nice, but also in the winter, and enjoy its 8 and 10 feet snowbanks, and then in the summertime enjoy that cool, crisp summertime season, you know, that is always has a slight edge of fall to it, but you know, it's summer in Maine. That's what it's all about. And that's just, you know, all those thoughts in retrospect that embodied that sign, "The way life should be. Welcome to Maine."
All right, man. Now we're to the thought-provoking questions.
Okay.
What did you learn from your trail experience?
You always saw funny registers entries, such as, I learned that it still costs $1.50 to wash all your clothes, or I learned that, you can't get a hot breakfast if you don't fire up your stove, or just different little idiosyncrasies about trail life. I learned that just being nice really does pay off, or, I learned that a smile given towards somebody, makes them happy. And, just learning all these simple things that you knew and, lived and heard of and realized before, but you truly did not realize until you thought about it when you're out on your hike. It was a journey of discovery, and I said that before. So, to be honest, if I want to say it's something that I learned that you can always take with you, is just that if you don't really stop and pay attention to what you're doing and think about it, that you waste your time with with rework instead of work. You spend time doing things you could have avoided if you'd planned a little bit. And with that, you know that even if you didn't plan for it, you're still going to make it through it. And that's that you can face anything and be welcoming to it, realizing it is an opportunity for you to exceed and succeed. And that's what I learned, that really there's nothing that can stop you in life, because you're always, that no matter what the situation is, you can handle it. If it's rain, snow, intense heat, you're going to live, you're going to make through it, and, if nothing else, you just take away an extraordinary amount of self-confidence. And I can't see anybody who have hiked the trail that could say that it wasn't a confidence booster. I mean, that's what you learn and what you take.
What about what you miss about the experience? I mean, if you had to look back and say, what was really great about hiking the trail was this, what would you say?
I truly miss taking every day for granted. Not that I took it for granted, but after a while you realize the trail is a way of life and it's work, and you don't think of it as a day where you're really not at work or part of the real world and real life. So that's what I miss. I miss the freedom. I miss the not having to think about it. I miss the run and gun type atmosphere where you're just going with the flow, If somebody gives you a hitch in the town, you're getting your food. If nobody does, well, you're camping in the woods, It's a free-for-all, and it's a time of adventure.
Big question. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
The final question. Would you do it again? And if so, what would you do differently?
I don't think there's a person who did it who maybe there's a few people that truly were forcing themselves to do it and that weren't enjoying it. And for that reason, they were happy for it to come to an end. They just were sticking it out because they were sticking it out. And then you had the folks that just got into it and loved it and just had this intense spot for it in their heart, truly mourning, a cherishing of the memories of those times. And if you're one of those types, which I definitely consider myself one, you cannot answer this question and say, no, I would not do it again. Yeah, it's like, it's never going to be the same as the first time, but you had such a great time that, it was something you'd be willing to try again. Think of things in your own life. If something is fun and good and you get some enjoyment out of it, you do it a lot. And to spend 6 months doing something and getting that type of satisfaction from it, you naturally would be inclined to do it again. If I were to change something about it, I honestly wouldn't have changed anything except for this very reason that I'm sitting here making this tape. I would have come back for trail days if I could have done it all over again. And that's just it. Some people might answer, well, I'd hike southbound. Yeah, I'd very much welcome a southbound hike. If I am to do it again, chances are I probably will head south. Because having grown up a major portion of my life and growing years in Atlanta and Georgia, finishing on top of Springer would be something very meaningful to myself. But I believe the essence of a Appalachian Trail through hike is to head the way we did, and that's to go from Georgia to Maine and be a northbounder. And the way all the towns approach you and the way everything transpires, it's very hard to imagine it in the opposite way, and that's what would happen if you headed southbound. So to answer your question, I'd maybe head south, but maybe I'd have to hike it two more times.
Daddy-o, you gave a strong interview. That's the end.
Is it?
Thanks, man.
You've been listening to the N2 Backpacking Podcast. This is your host, Bird Shooter, wishing you the best for your travels on the trail. To subscribe to the show, visit iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon, or your favorite podcast app. And give us a thumbs up or a positive comment while you're there. You can also stream shows directly from n2backpacking.com. Just click the podcast tab on the main menu. Music from the show was provided by Jerris under a Creative Commons license and is titled Hillbilly Anarchy. The show is a production of N2 Backpacking and is copyrighted by N2 Ventures, Inc. For more information on this podcast or to provide feedback or comments on this or future shows, please visit us at n2backpacking.com. That's the letter N, the number 2, backpacking.com.